History is full of bizarre, unsolved mysteries. And over time, these stories have been bent by rumor, warped by social media, and twisted into legend. I'm Michael May, and on A Study of Strange, we dig into these real mysteries and seek the truth, as close as we can get anyway. Recently, we've covered true crime cases like the Greystone Mansion murder, the Red Lipstick Killer, and America's first reported serial killers. Of course, every now and then we also dive into the odd, esoteric, and paranormal, including vanishing people, haunted locations, and UFO history. So if you like your mysteries historical, or if you love a good debunking every now and then, search A Study of Strange wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, the truth is always stranger than fiction.
When I was younger, yeah, all my dogs are named after aliens. It's Seti, Alf, and Lilu Dallas Multipass. So, like, I love sci-fi.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
All right, here we go. Another episode of Story and Craft. Thank you so much for stopping back by. Hey, if this is your very first episode, well, thank you. Thank you so much for checking out the show. Today, having a great conversation with the actor and producer Olivia Taylor Dudley. You might know her from the show on Sci-Fi from a few years ago called The Magicians. She's got a new film out called Touch Me. It is a sci-fi, horror, comedy, aliens. I mean, it makes a lot more sense as we discuss her background and why this is just kind of a cool project for her. Really had a great conversation. Really enjoyed sitting down with Olivia. Talented, cool. Really enjoyed the conversation. Hey, do me a favor. Always ask so humbly if you would. Please make sure to follow Story and Craft on your favorite podcast app. Make sure to like the show as well. That way people can find it. It makes it a lot easier. Everything you could possibly want to know about the show, past guests, just go to storyandcraftpod.com. There you go. Also, big fan of independent media, and we're kind of joining up with the good times happening over at Substack. All right? So you got to go to storyandcraft.substack.com. Really cool thing. That way you get an email every time a new episode comes out. Cool way to stay in touch and to just know what's going on with the show. All right, so I tell you what, let's jump right into it. It's a great conversation. Really enjoyed sitting down, meeting, and learning a lot more about Olivia and aliens. I don't think we've talked about aliens since Neil deGrasse Tyson was on. So really enjoy the opportunity to get back and talk about all things extraterrestrial. Why not? All right, so let's get after it. Today, it is Olivia Taylor Dudley Day right here on Story and Craft. So where are you joining me from today?
Los Angeles.
Is that home base for you?
Yeah. We live out in Highland Park.
You know, I know somebody else that lived out that way. Oh, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to use my memory. That's not going to work for me. But let's see. I am on a small island in South Texas called South Padre Island on the very tip of the Texas coast. Yeah, after bouncing around being from Dallas and living in New Orleans 20 years and being in Southern California, I was like, you know what? I'm trying to do the tropical Mayberry thing. You know, that's kind of where I'm going right now. If I can work from anywhere, this is where I want to be. So you got me right before lunch here. So you got any plans for lunch today? Anything going on?
Plans for lunch? No, most likely just heat up some leftovers with my dogs.
Oh, yeah. That's dogs plural. How many do you have?
I have three dogs.
What kind of pooches do you have?
They're all rescues. One is like a Kelpie mix, and the other two are both hairless dogs. So one is called a Peruvian Inca Orchid is the breed, and the other one is a Sholowitz Queenly. Not very simple names.
That sounds like the name of an exotic jewel, not a dog. No. You know, that's You said they're hairless?
Yeah. You know,
I'm on the opposite end of the scale. I've got a golden retriever, which is the very opposite of hairless. They make vacuum cleaners cry, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty much the exact opposite. But don't worry, my dog that has hair makes up for the other two. She sheds like crazy.
It's astonishing how much this little guy sheds. And actually, he's going to be two, so he's kind of heading out of the crazy velociraptor teenage phase.
Oh, yeah. But
when I got him, I was like, I might get two. I've never had two goldens. He's my third golden. And I was like, you know, and I forgot about the puppy years. I'm like, man, if I got two goldens, I think it would be just like insanity, you know.
Much. So, they're so high energy.
But yeah, by the way, if you do hear some scratching, that is my guy. I got him upstairs. He wants to be down here desperately.
No worries. If you hear barking, that's mine.
Well, very good. That's good. As far as the, you know, you got your new project coming out here soon, but the one you just did, you're not just acting, but you're producing it also, correct?
Yeah, I'm a producer on it as well. Yeah, I do quite a bit of producing. I love it. But yeah, on this one.
See, that is astonishing that you could do that. Because for me, the act, granted, my resume is exponentially smaller than yours, but that's a big hat to wear. You know, is that just... But we're kind of in the era, if you want to get something out there, you create it yourself. Was that kind of your mentality? Just, you know?
Yeah, I kind of fell into producing because, I mean, I used to make, I was in the early wave of people making web series back in the day, like when YouTube started and stuff like that. And I had a web series for a really long time. And that just kind of made me have to wear all the hats. And So I kind of learned every department and how to do everything, directing, writing, editing, producing. And then when my acting career started taking off, I kind of put those things aside for a while. And then when smaller projects that I was acting in were struggling, you know, a lot of indie films are very difficult to make. I kind of would jump in different areas and be like, well, I can help, or I know how to fix that, or I know how to do that. And so I kind of fell into it on accident. And then I just started producing indie films for friends and movies that I was in. And I love it. I love producing. I love all aspects of filmmaking. I love directing. I love editing. I love the whole process. So I find that producing is a really nice way to oversee the whole process, you know what I mean, from start to finish. Yeah.
Are you naturally a logistical thinker?
Absolutely not. You know. No. Okay. I, I'm actually so disorganized and I have pretty bad ADHD and I'm not made for it, but I have a good creative.
No. See, I disagree. So, I think the ADHD thing actually probably serves you because you can manage multiple things kind of at a time without it being overwhelming.
Well, totally.
I think the ADHD thing, you kind of overwhelm yourself sometimes with like, you know, there's something else I can do. Oh, that's a shiny thing I can actually work on over there. Oh, but there's this. Somebody told me once the best way to do it is work on two things within the same projects. Maybe filmmaking's like that. You got the producing thing. Then the editing thing for me is kind of like the second storytelling. Totally. You know, it's sort of, do you like to sit in the bay with the editor or are you like hands-on, you actually do the editing yourself?
I've done editing in the past on small projects that I love editing, but most of the time, you know, we hire an editor and then I sit with the editor in the editing bay with the director. The last like three films I produced, I was with them every single day, you know, for 2 months in the edit. And I love it. That is, I think, the most exciting part. I mean, acting is my number one love. I love it so much. But there's something about being in the edit that is magical. And you can reshape the story and performances and find things that weren't there on the day that somehow are magically in the edit. And it's such a satisfying thing to have to solve those problems. I think that's where I really thrive as a creative in filmmaking, is in the writing and the editing part with other people. I'm not good at answering the emails. I'm not good at like the logistics, like calling SAG. Like that stuff is harder for my brain, but figuring out a storytelling problem is something that my brain, it's like, loves to do.
Because that's where the rubber is hitting the road, you know, because that part of it, you can actually, you know, when you have to do the logistics or the finances, that's not moving the story forward.
No.
You know, but it's essential.
Necessary. Very necessary, but it is, some people love it.
So you started off with YouTube. Is this like is this way back in the day before even Vine and all that?
Funny enough. I had a web series called 5 Second Films, which we put out a film every day for over a decade, and then ended up making a feature film. And like
every single day you put out a, when you say a film,
and it was 5 seconds long. So So we were the first like short term content that came out before Vine, before TikTok. And actually like that was kind of our idea. And then a lot of people took it and ran with it and made a lot more money than we did. But it was way back before, you know, YouTube was monetized and we were one of the first groups that they offered advertising and monetization. And it didn't last long because it was only 5 seconds. And I don't know why, but advertisers thought that was just not enough time. But we were just kind of ahead of our time when it came to short content.
Was each 5 second block, was it a continuation of an ongoing story or was it a standalone story all on its own?
They're so stupid. They're all standalone stories. They're all comedy. They're really silly. Some of them are dark. Some of them, we always had like great guest stars. You know, Patton Oswalt was always a regular.
Really?
We're still making them because we had such a huge cult following, and like Jack Quaid is a really big fan, so he comes out and shoots every now and then. Like we still have a good following, and we'll get the gang back together again every now and then. But they're so silly, and they're really lo-fi and just like a set up a joke and knock it down kind of a thing. And sometimes it's elaborate, and sometimes it's not.
Are they still living in the YouTube ecosystem where they can be found?
Yeah, they're on our website. I don't, they're on our website, 5 Second Films, and on TikTok. And I think we have like a million followers on TikTok. I don't know. It's so weird that thing just keeps living on all these years later. It's so funny.
You were on the vanguard. If you started off with like 5 seconds. So that's kind of like, you know, maybe you inspired a whole generation that is inspiring another generation, you know.
Yeah. We like to think we did. We just ended up not getting paid for it, which sucks, but it's fine because it's now having a second life because attention spans have gotten shorter and shorter and shorter. And so like the younger generation has now discovered us, and now we're having a second wave of popularity with that. But yeah, I mean, it was a really good like training ground for me as a filmmaker and as an actress. I did a lot of comedy when I was first starting out, and having to, you know, make a joke and a whole setup and a joke and a performance and a story work in 5 seconds is really difficult. And it was a really great way to just every single day be working on that muscle and have to be funny and on. And yeah, it was a great time in my life.
Well, how did you get Patton Oswalt in your ecosystem there? Because now he's one of my favorite. You know, I'm a Gen X kid, so you know he's one of our guys.
Yeah.
You know, so how did y'all end up connecting?
You know, Patton is so wonderful. He's such a supporter of young artists, and he was always and still does looks for people online to support. Like, there's so many comedians out now that he found and just like lifted up. And that's what he did with us. He found our web series and he was like, wait, I love these guys. Let me come out and shoot with you. And then that turned into so many, him hooking up all these other talented comedians and actors coming in. And we just, you know, he was in our movie. We made a feature with that group called Dude Bro Party Massacre 3, which is just a ridiculous movie that Patton was in. And yeah, I just talked to him yesterday. Like, he's just such a supporter of young artists. I wish, you know, there were more like him. He's great.
Were you like a theater kid coming up? Was the comedy thing, acting, producing, was this part of the on the menu for you? Or did you just kind of, when YouTube and all that kicked off, did you're like, oh, here's something I can just kind of play with, and it manifested from there?
No, I was not a theater kid. I didn't actually, I never finished high school. I dropped out of school really young. I dropped out of school in seventh grade, actually, because I had really severe social anxiety and anxiety, and I couldn't handle being in school and the way I was learning, and it was just not working for me. And I was just a weird little ranch kid, horse girl. And so I was homeschooled and just home with the animals all day. So I watched a lot of TV growing up. I was like raised by the TV, and I just became obsessed with movies and the E channel and like, you know, like any documentary about a filmmaker or an actor, I was like obsessed with when I was younger. And I told my parents, I was like, I want to be an actor, even though I've never done theater. I'd never done any acting of any kind. And my mom and I tried to get me an agent when I was 15, and I did, but I didn't move to LA then. I ended up dropping out of high school, like homeschool high school, at 16. And then I moved to LA by myself when I was 17 to pursue it. So I'd been wanting to pursue it since I was younger. I would say probably, I don't even know what age, but forever. This is the only thing I've ever wanted to do. So finally,
when you were growing up, what was it that you were watching that, I don't want to say inspired you, but the things that grabbed your attention, that kept you occupied?
You know, whenever I get asked that question, the first movie that made me realize even what acting was The Exorcist, which I watched at a far too young age. I was 5 years old when I watched it, and I snuck into my, dad was watching it with a friend upstairs, and I snuck in and I saw what was on the TV, and I froze and I just watched it for like 2 hours, and I had no idea what the heck it was. But I just remember seeing Linda Blair on the screen just being so incredible and terrifying. And when I realized that it wasn't real, but that looked like so much fun for that little girl, like, cause she was so young in that movie, I was like, well, I'm going to do that. And I had such a vivid imagination growing up that it just, I don't know, it just kind of grew from there.
seventh grade. Actually, there was a fellow I know who is an acting coach, wrote a book. I think he said, if you can make it through seventh grade, you can act, or something like that. Seventh grade sucks. I whenever I meet somebody, it's like, oh man, junior high was great. I'm like, you're an alien. I don't know. Seventh grade sucked.
I guess it's great for some people, not me. I've learned how to be a socialized person the older I get. And like, the older I get, I realize like the place I'm most comfortable, because I have so much social anxiety that I've done so much work on at this point. But when I'm on a set, I have none. I have no anxiety when I'm on a set. And I remember the first time I stepped on a set, I felt totally in my skin.
Do you think it's because there's structure on a set? I mean, there's a clear mission and structure, and everybody knows, everybody's got their own specific jobs.
Exactly.
So
like, kind of fit into a spot. I know what everyone's going to do. So there's no surprises, and everyone wants to be there for the most part. And it's fun, and I don't know. There's just something about knowing like how the day is going to go time-wise. I know I'm going to be here for this long. We're going to do this for this long. Like, there's something about that eases my anxiety a lot. And I also just love like the community on a set. You start to feel safe because it becomes a family. So, you know, it's like a traveling circus, but that also, I feel like that really helped ease my anxiety, and it's like my happy place. But my happy place, yeah, definitely not in school. I was not happy in school.
I'm so there with you. I mean, there was time I remember being in seventh grade. You know, it's a God plays this weird trick on you. It's like, you know, social weirdness plus throws in puberty for good measure. You know, it's like everything's just happening. I'm getting PTSD just thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Was the horror thing, was it a fair assumption that seeing that The Exorcist, was that kind of your horror? You know, it's fake. So is that the reason why you like to play with that a little bit throughout your career?
Yeah, probably. I've loved horror since I was little, like not just The Exorcist, but my mom is really into horror and sci-fi. So growing up, we watched every horror and sci-fi movie known to man. And, you know, Unsolved Mysteries was always on, and The Twilight Zone was always on. And
like, Robert Stack, I saw this funny meme the other day. He said, he's always in a back alley behind an Applebee's and it's got to be dark. And like, anytime you hear Robert, they always shot his setup. It was always just like spooky. You know, he's sort of like a Vincent Price-ish
totally
kind of a guy, you know.
Yeah. I was just raised with. I was raised with it in a way, so it wasn't scary to me. It was more just like an escape and exciting and fun. Like, my mom and I still watch The Shining at least twice a year together. Like, I don't know. It's just comforting to me. And, you know, it also career-wise.
Shining is comfort. That's one movie that I still couldn't. I mean, as a kid, and even I'm just like, it's good. Don't get me wrong. It's very good. I get why it's good, but it's just anytime I'm out anywhere, and it happens occasionally, I'll see twins. That movie always pops into my mind. So apparently it affected me on some level. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
But The Shining, y'all just kind of bonded on horror movies, or does she kind of, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. My childhood is a little bit weird. I grew up on a ranch. My family, we have a horse ranch on the central coast of California. And my grandma lived there, and we lived there, and my sisters. And my grandma was really into like aliens. I grew up being obsessed with aliens and magic. And it was just kind of like a nerdy magic type household. So I think my mom.
Was it an escape for you, maybe? Kind of a
little
bit? Or
I think so. I loved the idea of not being in the real world. So, I mean, I think a lot of people who end up being actors have a vivid imagination since they were little. And I don't know. It was just really like nurtured in me to explore my imagination and storytelling.
Well, I think the alien thing is pretty cool, though. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I have a hard, you know, I don't know. That's for me. In fact, I used to have, I almost say a kid. This is back when the internet was really kind of getting going. I mean, I say late 90s, maybe early 2000s. And they had a screensaver. Everybody had goofy screensavers, but I rummaged up one. It was SETI. A screensaver SETI. And it would just run in the background and just, it basically just digested information, processed the all this data that the satellites are pulling in. I'm like, I wasn't really into it, but it's just cool watching my computer work, thinking maybe my computer will be the one that finds that one signal, kind of like Contact, in that movie.
That is literally my life's obsession. I actually named my dog SETI. My big hairless dog is named after the SETI Institute.
Really?
Well, I know it well. When I was younger, yeah, all my dogs are named after aliens. It's SETI, ALF, and Lilu Dallas Multipass. So like, I love sci-fi. But I wanted to do that when I was younger. I wanted to go work for the SETI Institute. Contact was like a really big one for me. So that's funny. Yeah.
But now they do this thing where it's not like really big satellites. They have whole fields of smaller satellites or something. Yeah. But I don't think they're doing that program anymore. It was so neat, that screensaver, you know.
They're not doing that program. They're not doing a lot of it. Like, the funding kind of fell through. It's still going, but I guess it's very expensive to, you know, take up space in the satellites up there. So...
What do you think about this new thing they're talking about, that Trump is, I honestly think it's a distraction from the Epstein files, but you know, whatever. Yes, but they're talking about wanting to release whatever information they got. And that's something that's like happening right now. So
I know.
Have you been keeping up with that or?
A little bit, but some of it seems like, you know, nothing. It feels like nothing's going to come of that. I don't believe that anything's going to be released sometime, you know, every 10, 15 years, somebody says that's going to happen, but we'll see. I don't know.
I honestly, you know, my whole view of it is I think people inherently like, universe is big. There's probably something out there. I think there's so much going on to be like, okay, this is one other thing we know now. Okay.
Yeah.
Onward, you know.
I don't think anyone would be surprised if aliens were walking among us. We'd be like, that's the least of our problems right now.
It would be kind of a relief. It would be a nice little distraction, you know.
Yeah.
I got to ask, what was your favorite as a kid? What was your favorite, maybe two or three alien-based shows on TV?
Oh gosh, shows
or movies
The X-Files, like, I mean, Alien, I loved Contact.
There was a show, I don't know if you remember V. Do you remember V? It was called V. It was
I never watched.
They did a remake on ABC, I think.
No, I didn't see that one.
I could talk all day about that because I find it quite fascinating. I think it's just, you know, like Carl Sagan. I love reading his stuff.
Obsessed with Carl Sagan growing up.
It's really interesting. You look at some of the stuff that he wrote or speeches he gave that have been transcribed, I think probably in the 90s. He was almost like a fortune teller of where we are right now.
Completely.
He knew it, yeah. So have you done any projects at all that center on that, either, you know, something you've done, produced, or something you've been in? Have you done anything alien-ish?
Well, the movie I have coming out now, Touch Me, is an alien-ish movie. So
I like the pause. Ish. Yeah.
Well, it is. It's like a psychosexual horror film, alien sci-fi movie, and about two codependent best friends who one of them falls in love with an alien who's on Earth, and then they both end up falling in love with him and having a relationship. And It's really weird and funny and bizarre, and definitely an alien movie. But I feel like I've done other ones, alien movies. Now I'm blanking on them. I love sci-fi. Like, I feel like growing up, all I wanted to do was be an alien hunter or go to space. But I have such bad motion sickness that, and I didn't go to high school. So I feel like I'll never work for NASA. But
well, I think it sounds like to me you sort of found your own, you knew the subjects you wanted to study.
Yeah.
And you dove in, you know? And I think a lot of people I know, I've spoken with, I think, the names are going to say, there's a couple other people I've spoken with just in the last couple of months who left school early. I mean, it was just, they knew what they wanted, and they just, it's nothing I recommend for kids, with the exception that there, some people just see with clarity where they are, where they want to be. And they, you know, they want to educate themselves, you know, so everybody has a different path. And literally in the last 2 months, I've spoken with a couple of people who are very successful. But
I feel like a lot of actors, have odd schooling backgrounds. Like, I'm so lucky that my parents were so supportive of it, but I think it's because I was so driven at such a young age. I think they realized they couldn't really get in my way, and they knew they could trust that that's what I was going to actually pursue.
Were you an only kid? Or did you have brothers?
I have an older sister and a younger sister. And yeah, but it's wild to think back now. Like, I moved to LA by myself when I was 17, and I lived with some cousins for a little while, a few months, but then I was just out on my own, just trying to break into this business. And, you know, that was before, you know, that was before we had like GPS systems in our cars, and I was like printing out MapQuest, and I was trying to find my way around and get jobs. And I just like, I really hustled. And I think about now what actors, what they have the access to start their career. And I'm like, whoa, I'm so jealous.
Well, when you look back, were you blissfully oblivious to what kind of a bite you were taking out of life by going to LA? Like,
yeah.
I mean, looking back, LA can be an intimidating, incredibly intimidating place for adults, you know, but as a kid, where you just had that perfect mix of naivete where you're like,
I think so. I had family down here, like a couple of cousins, like I said, and I had been coming to LA for a couple of years because I was also a dancer growing up, and I would come to LA with my friend and take class every couple of weeks. So like, I was like dipping my toe into what it was like to come down to LA without my parents. And I mean, I wasn't like a well-behaved kid growing up either. Like I did try going to high school for a month and I got kicked out, like the public school. So like, I was kind of like a tough kid, and I felt like I could survive by myself anywhere was my attitude. I was very confident. And I mean, I did, I don't know how I did, but I did.
So what did your folks do? I mean, I know you had the horse ranch, but was that your father's vocation, or was it ancillary to what his main gig was?
No, my dad is, now he has a house painting business, but growing up, he's a geologist. And my mom, she was a model growing up and then has pivoted to a bunch of different things. She's an entrepreneur. She's done a lot of things. And the horse ranch was actually, it was my grandma's ranch. And I grew up with horses, and so did my mom. So I rode my whole childhood, and I still ride. I have a horse in LA. So the horses were more me and my mom.
You're living here on the island. They actually have a horse, the whole stretch of the island, like the like where all the restaurants, the condo, you know, all the living, it's only like a 5-mile stretch. Beyond that, it's just dunes. And there's a place up there where they do have a little, you know, you can go grab a horse and go for a ride on the beach. And that's part of the Texan in me is like, God, that sounds like really cool. So it's either getting a 4-wheel drive vehicle, drive on the beach, or get a horse.
Maybe yeah. One
or two. Now, is your grandmother still with us?
No, she passed away a while ago. Yeah. Yeah. It's a bummer. She was such a supporter of my career, and she was just such a weird duck. I mean, like her and I were just like soulmates, but yeah.
What do you think the genesis of her interest in space stuff and alien, you know, all that, yeah. You know, where did that come from, do you think?
Oh man. I don't know. If you had asked her, I think she thought she would have stories of being abducted by aliens. She was convinced, you know, she had a few near-death experiences that I think opened up her mind to other dimensions. And like, you know, she was a wild woman. So I don't know. She always was that way since I was little. We would sit out on, we had this rock out in one of the fields on the ranch that we carved into a seat for her and I to sit in. And we would sit there with the telescope and just sit there like almost every night and look for aliens. But the ranch itself, I mean, this is like a whole nother podcast in itself, is a bit of a vortex and kind of attracts odd energy like that. So I don't know where she got it from. Nobody else in her family was like that.
Well, they say there are places on Earth that are, I don't know the phrase of it, but certain energy-ish zones or whatever. I think they say that they correspond to where some of the pyramids are. I don't know. Yeah. I don't go down that road.
If you asked her, she would love, that would be her jam right there to talk about that.
You know, I always find it's interesting to look at the science of things.
Yeah.
At the same time, philosophically, like a big fan of Alan Watts, you know, just kind of contemplate. And it's funny, the other day, I don't know what happened, but there was on the island, we had the power at least on this whole part of the island was zapped for about 15 minutes or so. And I peeked out. I mean, it's pitch black. I peeked outside. I was like, oh my God, I can see all the stars. This is because that never really happens because,
right.
You know, the light or light pollution. So it's definitely being out on a ranch where you can see that. It if nothing else, it probably opens up the contemplative parts of you. Yeah, I'm assuming,
yeah.
You know, now touch me. Was that something you produced it, but were you involved in writing it as well?
No, I actually didn't come on as a producer till we were already working on the project. The project came to me very late in the game. A producer I had done a couple movies with called me up and was like, hey, I have an actor that fell out of this project and I think you'd really dig it. it's about aliens and tentacle sex, and it's wild and weird. And I think you might be the only chick that would be into this. And I was like, okay, send it over. So I read it.
Well, you know, there's a whole Japanese like thing about that. Like, that, yeah, so that's like,
yeah. Well, the whole movie is very Japanese coded, and is that's inspired by old Japanese films.
But, really? Okay. Oh, yeah, okay.
It's really cool. But I read the script, and literally 2 hours after I read the script, I went and met with the director because I was flying out the next day to go film a movie in Arkansas. And so I had just that day to like figure out if I wanted to do this movie. And I met with him, and I just adored him. Like, but the movie also deals with a lot of mental illness. And the character has obsessive compulsive disorder, and I also have obsessive compulsive disorder, and so does the director. So we kind of talked about that for like 2 hours at this bar. We didn't even talk about the movie. And then by the end, he was like, oh, wait, do you want to do the movie? And I'm like, yes, please. It's such an odd blend of genre and tone. And I just fell in love with how weird it was. And I was like, this is either not going to work at all or it's going to really work. And so, I took a bet that it was going to really work. And so then I went off and shot this other movie and then came back and only had 4 or 5 days between the two, and then started shooting Touch Me. And then partway through, towards the end of filming, they asked me to come on to help finish the movie and be in the edit with him and stuff. So this one, I'm more of an executive producer because I didn't get the movie going, but I helped finish it.
Where did y'all shoot it?
In LA, which never happens. It was so nice. Yeah, I loved it.
That is very cool.
Now, my dogs.
Do you have any little ones rolling around? Besides, do you have any non-furry friends?
No, I just have
furry people.
No, I just have naked dogs and I have a horse, but no kids. I love animals.
Like title of a book: Naked Dogs and a Horse.
Yeah.
But I see somewhere that you I don't know if it was a project you worked on or you wrote, but do you do like a audiobook narration? Did I see that?
Yes, I do voiceover work. I haven't done that in a while, but I got hired to do this book series. It was a sci-fi book series that they wanted to have an actor, like not just a voice actor, but somebody who had a presence. Uh-huh. And at the time I had a show called The Magicians that was on, we did 5 seasons of, and that was a fantasy genre show. And so they asked me to come do that. And I can't even tell you how that was the hardest job I've ever done because I'm dyslexic. And I told them that I was like, this is going to take forever for me to read. They're like, but you literally read words for a living. But I was like, I know, but my process for acting and memorizing lines is so intense just so I can get the freaking words out in front of the camera. But having to sit in a booth and read out loud was so hard. And it was, I read multiple books for them. I mean, I ended up winning an award for my performance in that.
Really?
Series. Yeah.
I do a lot of voiceover, and that's one genre that I appreciate it. And it's kind of like for me being in a booth recording for long stretches is, that's just not I do shorter stuff.
Yeah. I love voiceover work. It's so fun. I love doing it. It's just reading a book was my nightmare because I was just so concerned that I sounded dumb and stupid and couldn't read. Like, it's just an insecurity I have because I mix up my words, but it ended up being really fulfilling. But eventually I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Well, acting, you're memorizing the script. So it's coming from the inside. Yeah. You're not reading it as you're before. So is that kind of how you approached it when you did the audiobook? Did you like memorize chunks of it, or did you still just, read it?
It was impossible to memorize chunks of it. I read, so many books for them. There was no way to. No, I had to just go in cold. And I knew the director was frustrated, but also she was lovely and she would mm-hmm. give me extra time. And I was like, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you do it from home, or you have like a
little setup? No, I would go to different, recording studios here in LA and Burbank. And then when I was shooting Magicians, we shot that in Vancouver. So on my days off from that show, I would go record in a studio up there. But yeah.
There's so much stuff out in the world that I haven't seen, or even things right now that I do want to see. I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
I didn't have an opportunity to catch Magicians. What was the kind of the general thrust of that? I'm sure somebody's listening is like, how do you not know what Magicians, it's kind of like, I still haven't seen Game of Thrones. So, I'm one of those guys.
Yeah.
But it's still out there. Eventually I will. I just haven't seen it yet. So what was kind of the gist of Magicians?
So much content out there. Yeah. The Magicians I'm so proud of it. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done. It was based on a book series called The Magicians by Lev Grossman, which was a really popular fantasy book series. And it's, I guess we always just say it's Harry Potter for adults. It's like Harry Potter-esque, but more elevated and edgy and contemporary. And it was so fun. We did 5 seasons of it. I played the lead character, Alice Quinn. I loved her. She was like the best character I've ever played. And I miss it. It was really fun to be on a fantasy genre show for so long because you get amazing fans, the audience for those shows. I mean, they're rabid for it. And, you know, I would go to cons and Comic Cons and stuff, and you just get so much fan love. And
that's got to be so rewarding when you do something that you're passionate about and that is, you know, and then other people, it could be years later, are still down with it. You know, I have friends that do, they do voiceover stuff for like anime or whatever. Right. And there's this whole ecosystem, you know, and it's another thing. Like, I think even Patton Oswalt's into that kind of the con thing.
I hate going to cons because of the people. It's really hard to do for me. Like, it's so many people. I get really overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But as long as I take my medication, I'm fine. Figure it out.
Yeah, I could imagine, because, you know, you want them to have a great experience. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I can imagine that being overwhelming. Everybody wants a piece of you. What haven't you worked on? Is there something that's floating out there like this genre, this kind of thing, this kind of project? It's kind of itching at you. You know, you want to do that, but you haven't had an opportunity yet. Or maybe something you've done you would like to return to.
I mean, there's so many things I want to do. I want to be working every single day. So it's, I love doing drama. And what I love doing is finding indie filmmakers, like first time filmmakers and like people who have some unique vision and just digging in and not knowing what it's going to turn out to be. I mean, that's not necessarily the most lucrative path in this business. They don't pay well, but I just love finding really passionate filmmakers. And I'm not really married to the idea of any sort of genre or anything like that. Like, I love all of them. I love doing comedy. I love horror so much. I love, you know, I love all of it. But no, I think it's just more based on the filmmaker is what I'm looking for. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I've always been curious. Like, I understand like some horror things. I kind of get Jordan Peele. His stuff. Like, I kind of get that. I can get into it, but I'm wondering in your words or in your thought, what is it that's magnetic about horror to horror fans? What is that thing that makes it so appealing?
I think that, you know, what makes horror appealing to audiences is that what I've learned from it and like what people are now talking about, why it's so enticing, is that for me, it lowers my anxiety and it lowers other people's anxiety because they know the thing is going to happen and then it's going to be over and you're actually safe. It hasn't happened in real life. There's something about being able to control a scary situation that is comforting for people, oddly enough. You'd think it'd be the opposite, but I think horror fans really get a lot of comfort in seeing something happen that's not happening in real life, if that makes sense. And the thing that I'm attracted to with horror films, and I feel like a lot of people in the business, is that you can use it as a vehicle for any other thing you're trying to say. Like with Touch Me, it's really, the movie is about mental illness and trauma and things that we go through as human beings, but it's, you know, masked by this crazy alien tentacle weird movie. But you secretly are talking about these other things and getting that message across. And that's just something that no other genre out there can do, but other than like horror, because you can't. You
know, I think it just came up with the movie poster, Crazy Tentacle Weird Movie.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Do you like, you know, when we're growing up and the movies are going to be in the theater, well, depending how they perform for a long time, and then dollar theater and then cable, or, you know, do you like the direction we're going now where it's less emphasis on the theatrical?
I mean, that's it's so hard because
because I'm thinking horror, you know, that's something you can be in a big room with other people. Right. You're all experiencing it. That kind of heightens it a little bit. You know?
I'm such a movie nerd and I love going to the movie theater. I mean, we all grew up going to the movies and, you know, physical media and going to Blockbuster and all that. And like, it was like, you really had to put in the effort and then it was an experience. And like, I always want things to come out theatrically. It's just not the way the business works anymore. But so I wish everything came out theatrically. That would be amazing. But it also, you know, streaming and, you know, online platforms really offer so many young filmmakers and people who wouldn't have a chance to put their projects out there to be seen. So it's like a double-edged sword, but I wish there was that middle ground, which where, you know, movies, small movies like mine, like, it's great that we're going to have a small theatrical release. I mean, it's going to release everywhere, but, like, you know, the window is much shorter than it used to be when it's in a theater. I wish we could go back to some middle ground where it was,
yeah, it was more funny. I was watching Matt Damon was in an interview recently, yeah. And he, I think he was lamenting because he's like, because with streaming, you almost have to reintroduce the premise every, you know, I'm not a writer, but you have to do it incrementally because you got people with, you know, those of us all with ADHD, not bagging on ADHD, but some people, they're doing, well, it's not that they're doing other stuff on their phone or doing that. So that, there's something to be said about putting everything down, sitting down and just locking in on the, you know,
I mean, it's scary because now, like, a lot of the streamers, they make writers have to do that. They literally have to write scripts that way, and TV shows have to be written where you restate the plot every so often, and that's really changed just literal storytelling, and that sucks. That part I really hate. I also, it's sad, like, I've gone to the movies quite a bit lately, and I find myself, it's hard to sit and concentrate, and I'm like, this is my favorite thing in the world to do, and yet my attention span has gotten worse and worse and worse, and I'm like, oh wow, that's scary. Like,
you think we're kind of rewiring ourselves, just the way we consume, you
I
know?
Think so.
I like my kids, they'll watch stuff on like an iPad or phone. I'm like, no, I've got to watch it. I've got a 75-inch TV. So to me, that's big enough. Yeah. You know, it's nice. You see everything. But I think I heard Spielberg years ago, going back maybe five, maybe more years ago, said that we're going to head in a direction where they're going to have maybe a few big blockbusters. They're going to hang out in theaters for a long time. Everything else is going to be in and right out. I mean, what he said, almost like a prophecy, seems to be happening. But I would like to think that the pendulum would swing back, like vinyl music on vinyl kind of came back. I'd like to think that there would be something, you know, in the world of AI and all that, there's going to be this hunger or thirst for authenticity and watching the story arc.
I think there is already in the last year, like, you know, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, like, they want physical media. They're going out and buying DVDs and VHS players, and they're discovering like camcorders and like all the things that I grew up with, and they want it. And they're, I don't know where the stats or where I've read this, but I have been seeing articles about them wanting to not be on their phones and go to the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And I hope that, you know, eventually trickles up into theatrical becoming more of a thing. I mean, the business is so, you know, rocky right now. We don't know what, you know, there's all the new mergers and all these things. So it's like, what's going to happen to theatrical? I don't know.
Well, I would like to think that there's going to be, you know, I remember there was a time in the 90s, you know, you had Kevin Smith and Linklater, and they're kind of the indie-ish stuff. I would like to think that maybe that we're going to kind of cruise back into another indie era, which I think would be fantastic, because I think there aren't nearly enough comedies out there. I know it has to do with economics, because what we perceive, you know, comedy that lands well here doesn't do well in international markets.
Comedy's hard. In it
as much. Yeah. As far as anything in the On Deck circle that you have besides Touch Me, do you have anything kind of coming out soon?
Yeah, I have another film that was out on the film festival circuit, and it still is right now. So we're trying to sell that one. Hopefully that comes out in the next year. And that one is called Abigail Before Beatrice. It's like a cult movie, very much more like grounded indie film. And I'm really proud of that one. And then I'm developing a few other projects that we haven't announced yet, but I'm developing and trying to get funding for a few projects right now. And then, you know, meeting on other things that are shooting. That's kind of where I'm at right now, is in a lot of development.
As we kind of wrap up, I always kind of toss out my 7 questions on the back end, just a little fun extra thing I like to do. And I inevitably, I always say to talk food at least once. The first question is, what is your favorite comfort food? Oh. Is something like you've had a bad day or a great day, you just you need it.
My favorite comfort food is microwave macaroni. Not very fancy.
Macaroni's come up a good handful of times. In fact, another Patton Oswalt thing he said about Denny's, he said, on the menu, they have a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese. They don't even try to hide it, you know.
Yeah, that's my
guess. But yeah, so was that when you were a little girl, where you just kind of, was that one the first thing you kind of learned how to make on your own? And you
I think, I mean, it's actually quite complicated in my brain. It has to do with my OCD, but like comfort foods growing up were a big thing. Like when I had bad anxiety, I only wanted to eat pasta and plain food and simple, like starches and carbs. And that is carried through as an adult. Whenever I'm stressed or have a bad day or have anxiety, I have to eat like pasta or macaroni or something I can predict what it tastes and feels like, if that makes sense. That's like,
yeah, well, and it's consistent. I mean, Kraft macaroni and cheese is, you know. Now, if you were to sit down with three people, the next question, you know, living or not, y'all are going to talk story for a few hours. Mm-hmm. Who'd those three people be you'd like to sit down with?
Mm. Carl Sagan, Stanley Kubrick, and Bjork.
You know, that's very cool. I always say this. I think not that you're having a conversation with them, but it's interesting. How would they interact with one another? That would be very fascinating.
Yeah. You know? I think shit would get weird real fast with that bunch.
Yeah. Now, going back to when you were young, who was your very first celebrity crush when you were a kid?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like I was really, I think I had a crush on Elijah Wood in the movie Flipper. I feel like that's something I remember, but I don't know. I should have an answer to that, but I can't. I never really had like somebody I was obsessed with in that way. I was just like obsessed with all actors. I don't know. Yeah, but I mean,
well, it's funny. Your name is Olivia. My oldest daughter Lily is Olivia and Haley. Were like two names I thought would be great. And I'm like, why do I like those names so much? Oh, Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, yeah.
Big crush when I was a kid. Totally. So I was like, but I have, you know, three kids, you know, my son Zachary, but I have a Lily and an Emma, you know.
Good names.
Haley and I think it's Haley Mills. I when I was young, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
Big fan of Olivia, just throwing it out.
It's a good name.
Let's say you're going to be, the next question, you're going to be living on an island for a year, exotic island. You like being there. It's fantastic. But there's no streaming. So if you want to listen to music, you got to bring a CD or a box set and a movie that you can, you know, music you can listen to over and over again, and a movie you can watch over and over again. What would that CD be and what would that DVD be that you would bring to the island for a year?
I mean, the DVD would just be The Shining. I know I've already talked about it, but it is a comfort movie for me. And that is always the one that I'm like, I watch over and over. So I think I could handle it. I don't know. I mean, like, Bjork is my favorite artist, but I feel like I might go crazy if all I listened to was her music on an island. Something classical. I do like classical music, so I don't know who it would be, but.
Something classical. Is that we kind of like listen to at night to kind of unwind mm-hmm. as classical? Mm-hmm. Or, okay. Now, if you were to say from the time you get up to the time you go to bed, what would be the component parts, like the recipe for a perfect day for you? If all these things kind of happen, that would be a spot on perfect day for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I aim for it all the time. I like to wake up early with my dogs. Like, I love watching the sunrise. And I love watching horror movies in the morning. So I always kind of have an ongoing movie I'm watching. I don't necessarily finish it, but I like starting the morning with a really intense film. I think because that's when my brain is awake. I'm such a morning person. And then if it gives me anxiety or like it's too heavy, I get to go on with the rest of my day. So I would watch a horror movie, make breakfast, then I would go to the barn and ride my horse, spend a couple hours at the barn, and then I would probably try to have my sister over and my girlfriends over for wine on my deck, and then I would probably watch a couple episodes of Friends with some like a good dinner or microwave macaroni. And then I would just go to bed with my dogs and cuddle with my dogs.
It's a very interesting curated day, and it's
probably really boring for most people.
No, I think it's cool because I have this philosophy on life in general, and I think it's sort of like interpersonally or even food. It's balance and contrast. You know, I have this theory that we like that. Then you start off with horror, but you end up with, you know, Friends.
I like to end the day lighthearted things because also I get sleepy as soon as the sun goes down. It drives my husband nuts because he can stay up late watching things and I can't. So I'm like, I have to just turn on something that my brain isn't going to be overstimulated.
I'm the same way. The problem with me is if I get something like last night, the last couple nights it's happened where for some reason I just wake up at 3 a.m. I think it's because the dog jumps the bed. And then my brain decides to grab something that's been thinking of during the day and just a project I'm working on. I'm like, this sucks. Now I got to try to get to sleep. And
it's a whole thing. Happens to me every night.
So I find that if I you know, music or something that kind of distracts that little like, you know, a caffeine fueled teenager in my brain finally kind of chills out, you know. Now, if you weren't doing this for a living, the next question, you know, somebody said, listen, the acting, the produce, entertainment, performance, it's just not available to you. Mm-hmm. What would be the next vocation that you think would bring you joy?
I mean, other than going to outer space, which isn't a possibility, I go back to horse training. I would just go back to the horse world. I've trained horses my whole life, and it's definitely like would be my plan if I wasn't acting, for sure.
Well, tell you, 7 miles south of me, that's where SpaceX sends out their rockets. So maybe I can, you know, if you want to do the space thing sometime, I can maybe hitch a ride over there.
I always say I want to do it, but I would probably, it would be a nightmare actually to actually be in outer space, probably. I don't know.
I the only thing that would bother me is the claustrophobic nature of it. That's the only thing, you know. But it is pretty cool, though.
It just sounds
my
so
golden
romantic.
Does not like Sonic. Yeah, my golden does not like the sonic booms, though. I made the mistake of taking him out to the beach to watch a launch. You know, it is pretty cool, though. Kind of the space part of me kind of gets tickled every time I watch it. Now, if you then last question, if you're to jump in that DeLorean, you're going to go back, you're 16 years old. You got a piece of advice. You got a few minutes with yourself to either make that moment of your life in some way maybe a little better or get on a different trajectory. What piece of advice would you offer up to 16-year-old you?
I think I would probably, I mean, I would have so much to say to 16-year-old me, but I think I would just try to reassure myself that, you know, I'm somebody who's always had very intense feelings and very big emotions. And when I'm in them, I don't see a way out of them. But the older I get, I'm able to know that, like, whatever that feeling or emotion is, it's going to pass. And you're going to be okay. And I think I would just like to tell myself that when I was younger, that you're going to figure out tools to be okay. And when things get sad or you're angry or you're overwhelmed and you don't know what's going to happen, it just keeps going and it works itself out.
Why don't adults, why don't adults tell kids that more?
I don't know.
Because I think that's something
I don't know. Because I try to tell my nieces that and they don't hear it. So I'm like, I guess that's just a journey you have to go on as a person.
Because what a great way to put it, big, you just don't see how, but you've been through enough stuff in life. You actually see, you don't know what the on ramp is or off ramp rather, but it's going to be there with the whole phrase of this too shall pass,
exactly.
You know, doesn't make it suck any less, but you know, it's but that is, that's one of the things I try to communicate to my kids. You know, I think they had a little easier go at some level than I did growing up, but I'm like, you know, life, it's waves, you know, it's up and down, you know, you gotta, but that's perfect. But now I'm excited to see this, as you put it, crazy, weird tentacle movie. Touch me now. Who's in that with you? Anybody, that we would know?
Lou Taylor Pucci, plays Brian, the alien, and he's an actor I've been a fan of forever. He's in so many indie films. And then Jordan Gavaris is, in it with me, and he's an amazing actor too. Yeah. It's a very fun cast, and there's no other movie like it. I'm very excited and like, what is the audience? How is it going to be received? I can't wait to see.
It sounds pretty awesome, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm actually going to go hunt down The Magicians. I think that's going to be my weekend watch because we have a big spring break down here, and I do not like being on the road with the big spring breakers.
Oh, yeah.
Down. So that might be the thing that I that I kind of do to pass the time. Definitely. I appreciate you spending some time with me today.
Thank you for having me. This was lovely.
It's more than a pleasure, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to catch up down the line.
Yeah, for sure. Have a good one.
Well, there you go, Olivia Taylor Dudley. Really enjoyed the sit down. I mean, it's been a while since we've been able to talk about things extraterrestrial, aliens. The new film, make sure to check it out. It is called Touch Me. It is in theaters right now, just came out a few days ago. So Olivia was a blast and really enjoyed the opportunity to get to know her. And I'm glad you did as well. All right. So as always, please make sure to follow Story and Craft on your favorite podcast app. That way you get notified. New episode comes out. Make sure to like the show. Helps people to find Story and Craft. And I appreciate that very much. Everything you could possibly want to know about the show, past guests, everything else. Hey, it's on storyandcraftpod.com. Also, Substack, we're there. Big fan of independent media, now more than ever. So glad to be at storyandcraft.substack.com. www.storyandcraft.com. You get an email, if you so desire, every time a new episode rolls out. So great way to stay in touch with the show. All right, so I'm going to head on out of here. Dinner time for me. And as always, thank you so much for making what I got going on here part of what you've got going on. It does mean a lot to me. And we'll check you next time right here on Story and Craft. Talk to you soon.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story.